why would we bother doing a podcast?
I don't know.
Yeah, we think about that a lot. That would just be a print artist?
Better.
Leave a comment that's hashtag this is awkward.
Psst. Hey, did you know Beards and Comics has a Facebook page now? Yeah, it's kept pretty clean too. Just a few posts a week. You get a Saturday self-promotion post. You get a Sunday or Monday just announcement of whatever the next episode is. We post a Wednesday resource from either one of our guests or one of our hosts. And then Thursday, we just post the new episode. And that's pretty much it. We might share stuff from other pages to it every once in a while, but we're not going to clog your feeds. So get over there and then let people know Beards and Comics, they have their own Facebook page.
Hello, Beards and Comics community. Ryan Shimmick of Shimmick Comics here. First, thank you to Aaron and Matt. Without you guys and this podcast, I wouldn't have had the knowledge necessary to successfully launch my first Kickstarter. And speaking of that Kickstarter, the Pits number one is officially launched and was funded in just over an hour, which absolutely blew me away. So if you're a fan of fantasy and action, I implore you to get over to Kickstarter and check us out. Matt himself even did a cover for the Pits number one. Thank you guys, and thank you, Beards and Comics.
Hey guys, this is part two of our discussion with Jason Brubaker. So if you missed last week in the whole first section, we talked a lot about Kickstarter fulfillment, a lot of business side of stuff, as well as Jason's history in getting to where he is now. So if you missed that, go back and listen to it. But this is part two.
I see a lot of stuff on prices of books, and people seem to start being... like comics versus floppies are getting too expensive as opposed to comics for, you know, like going towards trades. I don't know if, like, I guess with the industry, like, how do you feel about that kind of stuff? Do you think floppies are kind of going away? And then it kind of also, let's kind of throw in a little bit of what are your feelings on digital comics? Obviously, since you've worked in web comics, how do you feel that kind of whole system is going, or what are your thoughts on it?
It plays into my big question I wanted to ask him of what do you think the future of comic books looks like. All of that.
I'm kind of curious what you've been learning about what that debate is, because I'm kind of removed off of line quite
smart.
A bit. It gets too argumentative, and then I don't get
the internet?
Not social media.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, exactly. If you want my opinion before you tell me how it is going on right now, I do favor hardcovers. I experimented with soft covers with Remind. I think that was a failure. I mean, I learned my lesson from it. I don't think it's what I want to do with my books. It might work with other people's books, but as an artist doing books directly to my customer, soft covers is not what they want. They want a collector's edition, an artist signed, special, beautiful book, you know? And they're coming directly to me for that. And so they don't want the cheapest version, you know, and that's what the soft covers are, is the cheapest version. Like that's the soft cover with that cheap $9.99 price is made for the stores, for the consumer market. But the thing is, I'm not the consumer market. I'm not the store guy. I'm not making Spider-Man. I'm not, you know, it's just not the kind of books I do. Even if I do make that kind of book and put it in those stores, people are like, yeah, I don't know what that is, you know.
It's not Spider-Man.
Yes, or Spider-Man, you know. So
what's up with this robot cat?
It's still weird. I'll sell more hardcovers and I get more of a profit, and I like the way they look better, people respond better to them. You know, I can even sell those in stores easier than the $9.99 soft cover, you know. And so that's one of the things. I've come to the conclusion from reprinting Remind and soft covers that I don't want to do that anymore. Other than my like cognitive drawing type stuff, it's kind of a soft cover type thing because it's an educational book. You know, it's not a collector's.
Right. Right.
So going forward, hardcovers. I do still like floppies. I don't like the floppy cover price, especially when you're on Indiegogo paying $20 for a floppy cover price. I think that's ridiculous, and I've always thought it was ridiculous. And everyone has arguments for why. Well, you're buying a signed book, and you're supporting the artist, and if Michael Jordan made a comic, you would pay more for it. I'm like, okay, I get all the arguments, you know, but I think it's a ridiculous ripoff to charge $20 for a comic. So it was a ridiculous ripoff to pay $5 in a comic shop, I think, for a comic now, let alone not a ridiculous ripoff. Sorry, if you guys are selling yours for $5. But
we have to, Jason. We're
in
new.
In a comic book store? Nobody buys indie comics in a comic book store.
I mean, I know that's where we have that's where, you know, all the comics have to charge in order to pay all their artists and all that stuff. But to me, it's just, why not just go all the way and make a hardcover book and charge more for it, for something that can be actually preserved and put on a shelf and can, like, can take some, you know, beating, take a beating, and it doesn't just turn into throwaway art, you know? So the flip side of it is I love what Peter at Alterna Comics is doing with his newsprint floppies. And I love his strategy of reprinting like hardcover type stuff or collected like a graphic novel into issues of floppies and getting them through the stores at like $1.50 a comic. I love that idea. And so I don't know, you know, I'm not in that world, so I can't tell quite what the future of that's gonna be and how people are responding, but I'm more hopeful of that than I would be of me trying to make a comic and selling it for $10 or $20 straight to my customers. So does that answer that question kind of the
floppies? Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
And, you know, it kind of depends on what your goals are, too. So there's, you know, there's the people that love floppies. And so that's their nostalgia. And so there's a huge audience that loves that, too. Right. So it's not my nostalgia unless it's more the newsprint stuff. It kind of shows how old I am. But, you know, I guess, you know, I started into comics when you could still get a lot of the newsprint stuff and Image was just coming out. And then they started going to their glossy stuff. And I was kind of like, oh, the glossy stuff, it's okay. I still like the newsprint because I think it reminds me of the newspapers with Garfield and Far Side and stuff. Anyway, so that's my hope and vision for the future is like going back to an actual cheap version of the book, because that's what they're supposed to be. They're not supposed to be glossy, expensive versions of the book. They're supposed to be cheap to get them to the masses, right?
Yeah.
And that's the same thing I think of with digital. I think digital should be looked at as the absolute cheapest version of getting it to the audience. So I like the idea of digital being almost a free thing if you can, like just get the best work out there digitally for free because it's an advertisement. It's getting it to the masses as easily as you possibly can because, you know, it just like the floppies in the store is an advertisement for the graphic novels. That's what I've heard people say anyway. People in the stores and bigger publishers have told me that. Like, so it's more of a getting in front of people because that's the hardest part, you know, getting in front of people is the hardest part, you know, like you can have the most beautiful book, but there's so many people giving stuff away for free and showing stuff and paywalls here and social media and like, and then stores and comics and, you know, Kickstarter, like how do you know where to go to get these things? So any way you can, as cheaply as possible, get it in front of as big of an audience as possible. You know, I'm even into advertising, you know, buying advertising, if you can figure out that whole thing. It was a little bit easier when it was just like Project Wonderful and you had your own website. But now it's a little bit more of a head scratcher for me. But I think I'm learning. So, but not enough to where I can give you advice on it. So that's what I think of digital. I don't think digital is ever going to take over, though. I think it'll take over for marketing and for advertising and for being the cheapest way to get stuff to people. But I mean, no collector of Rembrandt is going to settle for a digital version, you know? I have a Ninja Turtle statue over here. Like, having the digital file of that, who cares? Like, yeah, I could look at it, pull it up in Maya and move it around, but I want the stinking statue sitting over there,
right?
Hand painted, you know, it's as a collector, I'm collecting. It's like, it's a tangible thing I'm collecting. And it's the same with books, I think, especially when you get into like the real collectors. And I think as artists who are selling directly to the customers, that's our audience, is the real fans collecting stuff. You know, we're not Stephen King just like shooting out millions of copies of our book. Like, imagine if Stephen King just sold directly to his audience, how weird that would be, how much more money he would make. Anyway, that's a whole other discussion. So what I touched on digital and floppy versus and prices. What'd you say? The future? What's the future? Good. What's the future look like?
look into that weird eight ball thing.
If we make it through 2020.
I will say I am very proud. One time I was asked that at a panel. What do you think the future of comics is? And I was dead on. But I think it was the only time I'll be dead on. But I said, I think pretty soon there's going to be like a YouTube type sites where it collects comics, and that's where everybody's going to go. And sure enough, like things like Webtoon started popping up. And that's kind of the easiest way now to put your comics online. And in fact, I don't even know how I would approach putting my comic online other than something like a Webtoons. Mm-hmm. Sure, you can make your own website and all that stuff. And I still think that's what I like. With Phobos, I'm giving it directly to patrons, but that's using Patreon, you know, same thing. And I liked the idea of trying to have a mailing list type comic where you join the mailing list and then I'll send you the comic. But it's such a kind of a far away concept that I don't know if it's going to work or not, or I don't know if people's brains think that way at this right now, especially with the social media mentality of like it's hard to go online without just going to either YouTube or Facebook, or Twitter. Where else do people go now? You just don't go anywhere else. You don't go search for another website. And so, for me, it's just basically YouTube and my email. That's all I go to, you know, or my site, or updating my Patreon or something like that, you know? So anyway, future is interesting. I do really think it's going to be more in the hands of the creators more than the companies. I haven't really thought about it really hard, but there's so much stuff happening with comic shops folding and going under, and then what? DC started not using Diamond anymore, I just heard. Like things are getting shaken up really heavily.
Right.
Not to mention there's so many Indiegogo and Kickstarter type campaigns. People are still spending money. If they are not allowed to spend money in the ways they're used to, then they're going to find other places to spend their money. You know, we might get to a point to where people stop just spending on comics and books. Maybe they'll just go and buy a video game instead if the comic shops are closed. But I would like to think that a lot of that money will just start filtering more into independent comics that are really good, you know, because that's the thing it just needs to cross, is a it needs to cross over into this place to where people can go onto things like Kickstarter and Indiegogo and just be flooded with really, really good stuff, you know?
That delivers. That actually delivers.
Yeah, exactly. And you have to have the people like, even though I don't like what he does, like Brian Polito, who does the Lady Death stuff, he has a business system in place.
Yeah.
He churns that stuff out. He knows the business. And, you know, I backed one of it to see how in the world he does this. And he has a whole system set up in place.
Yep.
And, you know, so like what he does or not, he's kind of an example of what I think a lot of independents need to start thinking about. You know, I would never want to do a Kickstarter every 3 months like he does, but I could see doing a Kickstarter every year on the clock for a graphic novel and a Kickstarter for a cognitive drawing thing. And, you know, have my vacation built into that. I realize now it's like, I need to set things up so that for longevity, which means breaks, like take breaks. I got to build those in. You know, if a company's not going to give me that 2 week vacation, I need to build that in now.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so it might be a hopeful vision, but because that's what I really want. And that's what I see. It seems to be working, and it takes a certain mentality though of an artist though, because you really do have to become a businessman. You have to become a marketer. You have to market your own stuff. You have to be a salesman. You have to, you know, know how to handle your finances. Like if you get $100,000 from a campaign, are you going to screw that up? You know, and there's probably like 80% of the people out there will screw that up,
yep.
You know, because they're not good with money. And I've even screwed it up, you know, but I've made up for it. You know, I've gotten freelance jobs to be able to finally fulfill and pay for things. So, so there's just a lot to learn. And, but again, if you love what you're doing and you're passionate about it and, you know, this stuff will be exciting to learn. You know, it may not be the thing you realize after you do it for a couple of years. Maybe I realize I don't want to do my own taxes, or I don't want to, you know,
actually nobody does
enter information into the computer, or I don't want to fulfill my books, or I don't want to do international shipping or whatever that is. That's fine. It was exciting at one point for me because I was venturing off and doing my own thing. But now that it's like, okay, I've done this enough. I know where I need to delegate. I know how to do this incorrectly and correctly. So I know how to give this to someone else to do it correctly, give them the right direction, you know? So it's just it's a lot of learning and growing up and being responsible and being an entrepreneur and wearing a lot of different hats. And so if there's enough artists that can do that, I think it'll be a thriving future for artists. You know, I think if artists can start thinking of themselves that way, instead of, I'm just the free spirit creative. I just want to put on the wall today, you know? It's fine to be that kind of an artist, but you know, I don't know how you can, how do you do that? If you can't make any money from it, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
You just be a trust fund baby, whatever they call it, and just, you know, have a studio and just do whatever you want.
Must be nice.
Right. Really nice. Oh man. I want to be a trust fund baby. So anyway, maybe I don't. I probably wouldn't have done anything. You know, I probably wouldn't have any motivation to do anything if I'd be crushing some
video games right now.
Yeah. I'd just be playing video games, yeah.
On a yacht.
Like why would I be motivated to do all this work if I didn't need to worry about making money? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's weird. Okay, anyway, so off topic. Wow.
Is that more like a internal thing? I don't know. For me, it's like, as an artist, I have that thing to where it's just like, you work so hard at something, you want to leave something behind that you've actually physically created out of your mind. And just having that, like, it doesn't matter if it's good or bad. I started to finish. Here it is, for better or worse, you know, like, that's, I did this. Just having that is just so amazing that people don't You know, and I guess that goes back to also like what we were talking about with books and the prices of books and Kickstarters and collecting, because it's hard for an artist to price their work because, you know, that's something a lot of people have a hard time with. But, you know, for you, it's like you said, there's those people that it almost does better because you've put that extra effort into making a hardback collector's edition. And it's not just a comic book. It's not just, it's artwork. It's something that you've created, you know? So like, I think a lot of people do understand that and respect it enough to where they don't mind paying that kind of money. They would, you know, if it costs $20 to ship, I got one of X amount numbered, signed, whatever. And then, you know, getting that from you. And then also you do have the other collectors that if they like what you did so much on a floppy, they'll go back and buy the hardcover because they like, you know, like it's such a weird thing to do and kind of balance of like, well, it doesn't matter. Cause I remember the times when I was like, oh man, yeah, I do want each one of these issues. And then you see that, like how they do like the Batman Unwrapped where it's just like the black and whites. And you're just like, man, I'd actually like, I would like to see that. And it's not even done. It's just pencils, you know, like I want that version too, because the story was so good, you know, it's just, it's such a weird balancing act of how do I price it?
To get to that place, you have to build that trust with your audience. And as independent artists, you know, they don't have a history connection growing up with your characters. So, so you're starting from ground zero, from the ground up, and you're hopefully in 20 years, you'll have that connection with your audience. Some people grew up with it and they're like, I will get the collectors this and the collectors that, and, you know, because you've built that trust, and also they know you're not trying to manipulate them out of money. And so, you know, like all these things just add up. And, you know, and so I think a lot of what the companies are doing now is a real disservice to the characters like Spider-Man and stuff, because customers are feeling like they're being taken advantage of now. And back in the day, they didn't, you know, me growing up, I never felt ripped off by Spider-Man. And it was my thing, you know, and Star Wars was my thing and all these things, you know, but now it's like, okay, you know,
it's all a gimmick. A lot of it.
Yeah.
It's like, they're just pumping out movies and books just for your money.
Exactly. And so what can set us apart from them is replacing that, you know, like being that stability, being that non-gimmicky thing that doesn't just have a beautiful cover and then filler art. Being that non-gimmicky thing that's not saying one thing and selling another and then going back on your promises and all that stuff. You know, if we can stand up as artists and be that, then I think we can so much easier win over so many people that just feel like really let down and hurt.
Are you saying we should have integrity? That's crazy. Crazy talk.
Yeah. Mind blown.
Yeah. The whole industry though is in this weird, I mean the world is anyway, but the industry as well is in this weird state. Which is pretty much all the stuff we're hitting on. It's the reason we have to ask ourselves these questions of how much do I charge for a book? And everyone pretty much has a different answer. And I hate having to charge $5 on a Kickstarter for a floppy, because it's like, oh man, I don't want to have to charge you this, but I also have to pay to print it and to get it to you.
Yeah.
So it's more about, it's that first rule you learn when you take a retail job where they tell you, you got to create value for the customer. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, well, how else can we do that? And so it's a weird balance of stuff. And, you know, like we said, we're still new at everything. So it's not like we have anything that we can do like a collected edition yet.
Yeah.
And the flip side of that too is, it's, you know, there's stories I have that, you know, are set for about 6 issues and then they could be collected after that. I don't have enough money to pay to get all 6 done now and just do a collected. I wish I did, because I would go that route. So like I said, it's a weird state that everybody's kind of in. People are just trying stuff to see what works and what sticks. So I don't know. It's about riding those waves, I guess.
Yeah. And I mean, you have to, you know, you have to make a dollar before you can make $10 and 10 to make 100. So I think it's just it's just the natural progression. Like I did, you know, even though I don't talk about it much, I did publish comics when I was a teenager and sold them at the local store. And, you know, it did okay, you know, and then I got a nationwide publishing deal with Phobos, and the first issue went out nationwide. I don't know how many it sold exactly, but then it got canceled after that, you know. And then I got the rights back, and I tried to publish it myself. I printed up 2,000 copies, and it was a single issue of Phobos. And it's just like, I sold 100 of them to friends and family. And then I was like, what am I going to do? And then I tried, like, print on demand for the next issues, and it just didn't sell that much, you know. And so, and then I was like, well, I'll just work on Remind. And then I put it online, and, you know, a year later, then I, you know, got the grant. So it's just, it's a long growing process to get to the place where I'm at. And it's, you know, I don't want to go back, you know,
yeah,
but I have my eye on the next mountain. You know what I'm saying? Like, how do I make cognitive drawing have big passive income so that I can make the books? You know, it's just a weird thing. And in talking to people like Kazuo Kibayashi, he's like telling me, like, you're chained to your books. You need to have your books chained to you. And I'm like, Kazuo, how do I do that? You know, and he's like, well, you need to get a publisher and an agent.
Great master. How do I do this?
Do I need to do this? You know, and so that's an option, you know, but I don't know. I don't know if I would be less chained to my books if I had an agent, you know?
Right.
Like, if I only get a $20,000 advance, that doesn't help me, you know? I make more, you know, I have to make more than that for the year. And that will be very disheartening if I don't, you know, if I can't pay my bills and right. I have a major publishing deal. That would be kind of disheartening. So, I don't know what the answer is, but I do see this working. You know, again, like I say, I've been here five years, and it keeps growing. As long as it's not shrinking, I think I'll keep doing it. And as long as the money keeps coming in to pay for the next ones, I'm gonna keep trying it. I have my eyes set on the idea for campaigns being what I saw Jake Parker doing a couple of years ago with his Skyheart one, where he asked for money up front to pay for the production of the book and then printing. And so it meant a bigger goal. And I've always been nervous about that approach because I didn't think I had enough commitment from the fans to do that. But I think going forward, next year I'm going to try that with a new book or something. And then, like, my goal would be like $50,000. And it just means I need to sell to a lot more people to guarantee that I should actually do that book.
Yeah. You know?
And so it's kind of forcing, it's not me charging $50 for a book to get that money. Instead, it's just saying, all right, guys, everybody online, you're on the hook now. If this is going to get made, I need to get a lot more people buying it, you know, to lock in that price so that I can justify doing it.
Just start a pyramid scheme. You tell two friends, and they'll tell two friends, and that's like 50,000 friends.
Yeah.
That's
right.
That's the whole world, man.
I tried one of those pyramid schemes when I was a kid, and it was done with letters. You know, I got a letter in the mail, and they're like, send it, go and get this list, and send out 10 of them, and put a dollar in it. And me and my friend were like, we're going to get rich. I actually tried it with letters, so, yeah.
Did you get, like, $2 back?
I got a couple letters in return, but it definitely didn't do what it was supposed to do. So, anyway.
I love it. You fell for it, Jason.
There's a lot of things I fell for, but I think, you know, even though I've wasted money falling for dumb things, it's opened my eyes to those things now.
Yeah.
I'm very hard-headed now. I think the thing I hate more than anything is people trying to manipulate me.
Yeah.
And so, and I think I have some really good warning signs. I think I'm the manipulation radar guy. I don't know. Personally, you know.
Yeah.
So
I think that's such an important trait to have, especially with this kind of stuff, is just be able to read people well and see who actually has your best intentions and who isn't really after just to like ride on your coattails or just to, hey, I can help you, but, and so, you know, it's the same reason we do this, you know, like we could be those guys that slowly start learning the business, get up and figure it out and then not tell anybody and make it this big secret. But like, we don't care about that. We want more people to be creative, or if they're struggling, like, hey, here, help. Check. Here's all of our mistakes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't do this. If you exactly. message us, we'll tell you, don't do that.
And I think you're in the perfect spot. Like when I was putting Remind online, I had the Making Comics podcast, and you know, it served me as much as it served everybody else, because I was able to have these conversations I needed and everyone else was able to get them too. And it's kind of, my interest in doing that has kind of waned more recently, just because I'm not learning anything new from it. I'm more or less answering the same questions over and over again.
Yeah.
And but I think it's great to start that way, because it really, I think it's necessary, you know? It's schooling, you know, it's doing the training, the on the job training. And there's no real rule books for this stuff, and we're all figuring it out as we go. And so, yeah, I think it's great what you guys are doing. I love it.
Thanks, man. Yeah. It's that exact same thing for us. At some point when it's like, man, we haven't really learned anything or had a good conversation in a while, I guess it's probably time to slay the dragon or something. So.
Yeah. And I mean, eventually it might get there for you. For me, it's like, I enjoy being on this side of it now more, because I don't have to set it all up, not to bash podcasts or anything, but, you know, I don't have to set it all up and keep the conversation going. I can just come on when people ask me. So thanks for asking me.
Oh, we're going to ask again.
No, it's going to happen.
Oh, don't.
But I mean,
especially if you got another book coming out, don't worry. We'll get you on.
Well, yeah, I did kind of a, what's it called? I studied about a year ago, I guess it was, I looked at all the people. I tried to gather as much data on the people who joined my mailing list and bought things from me to figure out where they first heard of me. And surprisingly, social media was dead last. Social media was always the thing that people went to after they discovered me. But they discovered me other places. And so it kind of solved the problem of, should I focus my time on social media? And it's just, I haven't. I've just completely abandoned it. And it just doesn't matter. It just takes up less of my time now.
Such a weird thing to say in 2020.
It's so odd. And I have this conversation with a lot of people, and everyone seems to think, well, it worked for you, but that's not how the rest of the world works. And I'm like, okay. So, but people discovered me from podcasts like this, from my YouTube videos, from my blog posts. And so stuff that has meaty content is really where people discovered me from, you know, or books and libraries and all that stuff, you know, but it's not any of the filler content. It's nothing that's like, let me just throw something up onto social media real quick. You know, let me post a selfie. That will get a lot of book sales, you know? So podcasting is huge. I think it's a huge answer for just making sales, getting that audience, growing that support, growing that base, that tribe, you know?
I think you just reaffirmed a lot of stuff too that Matt and I have had even recent discussions. I told him, you know, dude, after this next Kickstarter, we're pulling back completely from our Facebook and just using it to post like press releases or like any actual news, and not just like normal posting. And then I was like, I'm going to go a step beyond. I'm going to deactivate Facebook off of my own phone. And so I did that. And, you know, that helps mentally a lot as well. Yeah. But podcasting, we started a little Discord that's for Beards and Comics Podcast. And I think that's the people that Matt and I interact with. They all came in through the podcast and they're all on that Discord now. It's not been anyone through like our Facebook or our Instagram and anything like that. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, I think you just reaffirmed a bunch of that mentality.
Okay. So this is how I look at Facebook now. This is what I think. I think Facebook has two distinct businesses that they're doing. They're mining information from people who use it by claiming that it's the thing that makes them popular and gets attention. But all they're doing is trying to gather as much information on people by having them post stuff on there regularly. And then there's the other side, which is a whole different portal, which is the marketing, the people who are buying advertise. And they have a whole gold mine of people that they can dig through and advertise directly to. And everybody thinks that, well, I just need to have the presence on Facebook and be that interactive person, and that will grow my audience. But no, if you want to grow an audience, then you go to the other side of it. And you mine through all that information and you buy ads and you can get really highly targeted and all that stuff. So I hate Facebook, but now I'm like, well, there is a good side of it, even though it's kind of evil.
It's a necessary evil.
Yeah. It's like, because I just barely started working with a guy to try to learn to just buy like, buy stuff, buy marketing on Facebook, and it opened.
Need to have a whole window. Separate private conversation. Literally,
I told you about this, Aaron. We had this conversation.
What you're talking about right now, so we're listening. It's go ahead. Weird.
Let me just say, it is a whole other world, and it's nothing like I ever thought it was. So, and I had tried doing social media for 10 years, and it was still, I was completely backwards in my thinking on how to use Facebook as a business, as a company. To advertise or to just gain a following. And I think, you know, Facebook is really good at manipulating people into giving them their data. And that's what they sell to the public. Yep. And the public is under the impression that they're growing a following, but they're not. They're just giving data away. And so the true players are the ones who are accessing the data and then throwing little things up in front of those people, you know? Forget all the organic stuff. That's not how Facebook works. It's all planned. It's all bought. So anyway, I learned a bit about it, and I kind of want to try more, you know, and play with it a little bit more. But I still hate Facebook. I still hate social media. But you know, I don't.
So let's be honest. The Jason Brubaker creative hates it. But the Jason Brubaker businessman likes it. Right? It's that weird.
Yeah. So the thing I don't like about it is I don't like going on social media to interact and be social. I don't think that's what it's good. I think it's destructive. And and so, you know, Twitter, like, why? I don't know. Even Instagram, I'm kind of like, well, I was sold on the idea of Instagram because it's visual, but it really hasn't helped me that much
it's so irrelevant still.
Yeah. It doesn't attract people to me. Mm-hmm. I don't get any new fans. Existing fans go there to follow me more, but I don't find new fans. And so, but then again, you know, Instagram is part of Facebook and you can mine the people like me who are on there trying to post pictures of my art. Yep. Like I am the customer. The way I'm using it, I am the customer. I'm not the person selling. Right. And so we have to just switch that train of thought. You can completely log off and never be a customer on those platforms and you'll be just fine. Like life was good before social media. It can be good now too. But you can still take advantage of those things and actually go to the other side, however horrible that sounds, and actually, you know, try to just place your advertisements in front of people. So I don't participate in it to communicate with friends or family, because all I do is hear their thoughts that I don't want to hear. And I don't want to be their friends or family anymore.
Yep. Right. Yeah, pretty much.
So anyway,
welcome to 2020.
Yeah. Well, I got a text from my wife. I got to make sure.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Yeah. We're going to wrap it up for you. I promised I would get you out of here. So, man, a lot of useful information. I don't even know what I'm going to title these episodes either.
Let me.
Yeah. So it's going to be Jason Brubaker talks about everything.
Jason Brubaker breaks the internet.
Yes. There you go.
So real quick, since we're coming close to wrapping up, we definitely want you to promote your book, the one Cognitive Drawing, and kind of give us a rundown on that before you leave. And then also, you know, definitely pitch your other stuff. I don't know if Aaron, did you have any other remarks or last questions?
No, this was going to be my, usually I'm the one that's like, okay, well, give us the rundown, but okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'll do it. So give us a rundown.
This isn't a visual thing though, right?
No.
Audio?
Yeah. You could show just us. Audio. We don't mind.
Okay.
So I think I've seen it before though, but
okay. Well, I'll try to. Just
I want to see it though.
Wait, so
I want to see it, Jason.
No, well, you probably haven't seen it because it wasn't actually printed yet, right?
Oh, so we just saw fake mock-ups.
Okay,
I saw the book being on Indiegogo where you were promoting it, so I was definitely I had saw that.
Okay,
so but it wasn't printed yet.
So yeah, the newest thing that is almost out is Cognitive Drawing. It's a 90-day workbook, and this is a method that I created when I was kind of in high school to teach myself how to draw, because I was in the middle of nowhere. I wanted to learn how to draw like Todd McFarlane or Jim Lee, and I was like, how would they draw this arm? And I said, well, if instead of me wanting them to look over my shoulder and tell me what I'm doing wrong, what I can do is reverse engineer it and just find the arm pose that I want to learn to draw, and then pretend like I never saw it, and then try to draw it as good as I can myself, and then pull that thing out and say, oh, that's how they would draw it. And then I could draw it from reference, and then I'll start over and I'll draw it again from memory and then compare it again. So it's almost in essence like my favorite artists are showing me what I'm doing wrong when I draw the arm or the fingers or the eyes or the faces like them, right? And so that's how I taught myself how to draw different styles and even anatomy. I just filled up notebooks with drawings from memory, reference, until I felt like I got it. And I'd break it down to really simple parts like eyeballs or nose or a hand or, you know, even fingers, just simple things just so I could try to ingrain it in my memory. And my thought was, if I just do this with enough angles and styles, then eventually I'll just be able to have this huge archive in my mind that I can just pull from. And sure enough, I got hired doing storyboarding, and I was sold as the fastest artist that they had. I would like, artists would turn down client work because they'd be like, well, we need this commercial storyboarded in 3 hours. And everybody would say, no, I'm not going to do it. It takes me a whole day to do 20 panels. And then they would call, my agent would call me and be like, sure, I guess so, I'll try it. And then I'd go in there and I'd do it, you know? And so that just became what I was sold as the fast artist. And I really think it's because I just had this archive in my memory of things I could just draw. So anyway, years go by, you know, I moved back here, moved back to Idaho. I taught a little class for free just here locally. And I was just like, I'm going to see if this whole idea of how I taught myself to draw works for other people, because I've never seen anyone else put it together in a workbook. So I created this little workbook. I used some manga pictures. I used some animals and different things. And it was a class of like, you know, 10 or so people, all ages. Some people never drew. Some people drew a lot. And everybody except for one lady was blown away with it and totally was able to do it. And it just got me all excited. So I was like, okay, I need to make a workbook out of this, you know? So then the next step was let's teach anatomy using this method. And so, you know, I had beta testers. I had 100 beta testers try it out and got a bunch of responses. I applied all these notes, redid it. I ended up hiring models and took pictures, and it turned into this 160-page book with 90 days of exercises. And if you go through the whole thing, in my mind, you will be way better at the anatomy. This one just focuses on the male figure. I'm planning on starting a female book next as soon as I finish Phobos. And I just want to keep making these things and just expanding. We've had it in charter schools. The students loved it. Homeschooler groups have used it. Drawing groups have used it. Sold about 1,300 digital versions before I even did any marketing for it, other than just me talking about it on YouTube. And then launched the Kickstarter, and it sold another 1,250 copies there. And so now I'm just waiting to get the books. We're going to ship them out next month and go from there. So that's cognitive drawing. So if anyone wants to learn to draw or knows anyone who wants to learn to draw, go to cognitivedrawing.com and you can download a little sampler and see what it's like. See if it works for you. You can try it out before you even buy it. It's still on Indiegogo. You can buy the book still. You can buy the digital pack. I actually went through every day's lesson and made a video of me doing it. So there's 90 videos that you can purchase for an additional $10 of me doing it with you. That's cognitive drawing. The new thing I'm working on, well, that's new, but the newest thing I'm working on is Phobos. I'm showing two little Phobos books that are about 100 pages each. These were for my patrons only. If you want to read Phobos in its digital version, you can become a patron at patreon.com/JasonBrubaker. I give them links to the digital versions. It's not available online anywhere else. And next month, well, probably in a month or two, I'll be launching an Indiegogo for Phobos for the first volume, which will be about 300 pages. And that's what I'm working on right now. I was working on that today. So, and then obviously you can buy Cythra. Cythra is the complete set. The only one you can't buy online is the sixth book because it doesn't come out until next year. But if you email me, you know, I'm pretty easy. You can convince me to sell you one. I have them already printed. It's just, I've been just waiting for the release date so that I'm not bombarding people with too many books. There's also Remind, my first graphic novel, Remind 1 and 2. Can get them pretty cheap on Amazon right now. And that's kind of all I got, I think.
Heck yeah. Well, this was fun. Matt, do you want to close us out in song? I'm just kidding.
Mommy made me mash my M&Ms. Right. Isn't that what you do? Is that the warm-up?
Yeah, that's what I
do. Oh, okay. No, that's all I got. But no, Jason, we really appreciate it. I know I've learned a lot. I've checked out some of your YouTube videos. And guys, if you want to check out some more of his stuff, go on his YouTube. Definitely pick up a book. Show some support. Keep us all informed, Jason, on Phobos. Like you said, we'll keep an eye out on it. You know.
Do.
Obviously.
Just so everyone knows, I do have a YouTube channel. I heavily went one direction with it for the last 5 years, but I've been kind of scrubbing old content over the last couple months, and have a whole new direction I'm going to try to go with it. But I don't know if I want to say it at all what the direction will be because.
Hey man, no pressure.
To be announced. To be announced.
But it'll be a lot less videos than I have been posting. Before, I'd do a lot of live streams and just post kind of like answering questions type videos. But I want to kind of focus on higher quality. I want to do more quality over quantity on YouTube. I've been doing that with my books, so I figure I might as well start doing it with YouTube as well.
That's so, right.
Anyway.
That's awesome. So check him out everywhere. Don't even bother trying to interact with him on social media. We appreciate everybody. Check out the Discord. I don't even remember what the link is, but just look up Beards and Comics Podcast on Discord where you can get all kinds of different resources. And now we have a new book that we can post in there from Jason himself. So I appreciate you guys. And until the next episode.